This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Seven days till the playoffs begin. Can't wait for it. You're listening to the NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by David Manouk of IllegalCurve.com. Ezra Ginsberg of Illegal Curve, at least he was in studio seconds ago, and Michael Remus is producing this show, as he always does. We have a jam-packed show, as Drew always says, but we do today. We're going to talk about Mike Gillis firing in Vancouver, and we had Ben Kuzma on of the Vancouver Province just this past Saturday to discuss what would happen. He told us Gillis could go, Tortorella could go, both could go. Well, we know Gillis is gone. We don't yet know if Tortorella will be back. We're going to talk to Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province, the second hour of the show. The Jets, of course, are playing the Boston Bruins tomorrow night, last home game of the year. Bruins play-by-play man Jack Edwards of Nesson will be joining us at the bottom of the hour to talk about the Boston Bruins, who once again have been quite impressive in their regular season performance, a well-oiled machine coming to town, maybe the best team the Jets have seen all year. Not that it'll matter for the Jets aside from, you know, draft standing, but it's going to be an interesting show. We're going to talk about Randy Carlyle, what's going to happen, Darren Dreger alluding to a possible firing there. We're going to talk about our UFA of the Week segment. We're going to talk about Andre Markov, what's in store for him. Obviously, the Habs look like they're locked in to play Tampa in the first round, so Markov has some short-term aspirations of making run with the Habs and then some long-term aspirations of making some money. We're going to talk about the Jets first and foremost, though. But before we do that, Ezzy Ginsberg.
Yeah, ready to go. Another show with Dave M. filling in for Drew Mandel here. Lots to talk about. And I think the tweet that summarized what's going on, guys, the best is the Canadian city that possibly has the least turmoil in it right now is the team that you'd expect to have some turmoil, and that's Calgary. It seems like everywhere, mm-hmm. Vancouver, Toronto, Winnipeg, I guess Montreal, because they're the only team that's going to make it. It seems like every city right now, Edmonton, it seems like something's going on, because as we know, there's only going to be one Canadian team that makes it. And it's unbelievable what's happened here. Ottawa, I expected it to be in the playoffs. Vancouver, Toronto. And things don't work out. That's what happens. One or two extended losing streaks, as the Vancouver Canucks and Toronto Maple Leafs found out, that can lead to you golfing in April.
And don't talk about pressure, because you can argue the most pressure, you know, probably is Toronto, but Montreal is close by. I know Vancouver is as well. But Montreal, with all these expectations, with the camera crews following them around all year for the CH24 series, which is excellent, by the way, you can see on TSN, that is a pressure cooker there, and they're handling it quite well. But you look at the other cities, Toronto, Vancouver, the pressure there, I mean, if that's an excuse, then there's some problem, I think, more, you know, in the locker room and probably in management. And you look at the way, but before we get to Mike Gillis, I'm going to hold that thought because I want to talk more about Gillis in a second. I want to quickly talk about the Jets. They went through hard practice today. Dave, you were talking about that and writing about it on IllegalCurve.com and on our Twitter at IllegalCurve about the hard practice that Paul Maurice put the Jets through today. You want to quickly elaborate on that?
Yeah, he put the players through a hard skate, and Andrew Ladd, the captain, who was partaking, even though he most likely won't be playing in the game tomorrow, he took part in it, and it's interesting because it really kind of showed that Coach Maurice is saying, I'm here for the long term. I'm here. This is what the team has to be ready for. Now, he's not going to come out and say that. He's still kind of holding to the, I'm still making my decision. But
yeah,
but
what's the deal with that? I mean, are you waiting on the family to make a decision, or have you made a decision?
I think, no, to be honest with you, I think he's still waiting on his family to make the decision. But I think...
Sense a lot of mixed messages, though.
No, I don't. This is why. I think the rationale is that he's saying is, I need to put into place good habits for this team. Regardless of whether I'm coaching the team or somebody else is coaching the team, there need to be good structure in place, so either I'm ready to move forward with them next season or somebody else's, and they can say at least that because then he can use that towards for his advantage, right?
Yeah, I mean, conspiracy theorists would say even if he's not coming back, that looks good on him in other cities if there are prospective coaching openings. We have some audio from Paul Maurice about today's practice.
One of the areas that we will look to improve is our overall group fitness, to be on that track, and then I'm going to tell him, you know, I want you to be prepared for a tougher training camp, perhaps, than you're used to.
You hear Paul Maurice there, and at the end of the day, I like what he's doing. Because Monday night's game, I don't think you question really a lack of effort on most players. And always questioning effort is always very difficult to do, especially when you're not in that room. Now, I think there's probably some coaches who think that some of those guys could have put out better efforts. But a lot of the players playing in that game, Ezzy, you know, were AHL guys who are playing above their head against a team in Minnesota that, while I think they have their flaws, still has an awful lot of talent.
Right, and they beat Boston last night.
Yes.
So you look at the game on Monday night, and they didn't win, and it was one of the most boring games we've ever seen at the MTS Center, and that might be because of the players in the lineup. It might be because there's not a lot at stake for the Winnipeg Jets. But, Paul, I agree with you. I like what Paul Maurice is doing here. Mm-hmm. Dave mentions it's about habits, and it's about how he wants them to practice going forward. But it's also about this year and what's coming up, because you have back-to-back games, and then the season's over. So he's saying, I'm going to put you through a practice here, guys. You're going to work. I'm going to show you that just because there are two games that are left and they don't mean anything to our team, this practice means something to me, and I want this practice to mean something to you. And he has said repeatedly, Maurice has said this, that he wants them to practice harder.
I think that's great. I have a question, though, in terms of messages, because I just didn't understand this necessarily, and I want to know if you guys did. They go into Toronto, and they play Pavlik because they say they have to ice their best lineup. They want to make sure they ice their best lineup for a team that's in the playoff race. And then, so they go to Toronto, put their best possible lineup out there, arguably. I think you'd say that it was. Then they come back to Winnipeg, home game, and they basically sit everybody against a team that's in the playoff race, too, in Minnesota. How can you use the argument of playing your best players and then immediately not play your best players? That didn't really make sense to me.
Well, Dustin Byfuglien did leave that game. Andrew Ladd was probably what you're referring to, right?
And then Pavlik, too.
Sure, and then Pavlik, and that is a good point, because Toronto's was a team that had the chance of making the playoffs. Minnesota's a team that, even though they haven't clinched a playoff spot, but they're making the playoffs.
Right.
They're still competing for the end of the season and retaining that seat. So it is questionable, and that could have just been the message. But you could have played them in front of the home fans, and you're saying that the decision is on Paul Maurice. He can do. When he's the coach, he can make that decision. Mm-hmm. But I guess the motives were a little bit questionable, in the sense that if you're not dressing Pavlik, does that mean you're not dressing your best team versus the Wild?
It was just odd reasoning. And you're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Reminder, next week, next Wednesday, the final NHL Midweek of the season will be held at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. The station will be down there all day, interviews with Mark Chipman and Kevin Cheveldayoff. So come down there. We'll be happy to talk to you, talk some hockey. We're going to be there from 6 to 8, winding up the NHL Midweek show for the season. Dave, what were your thoughts on those comments? Because they seem contradictory to me.
Well, you know what? It's interesting because, I mean, you got to remember, Ladd also, he said he got banged up in the Toronto game. So that's why he held Ladd out of the game on Monday. So really, it becomes a question of starting Hutchinson over Pavlik. And I guess the fact is that Pavlik had already started a number of games in a row. So maybe he was just going to Hutchinson just because it was kind of his turn. And as opposed to, I mean, and the other thing is also, it's maybe he felt that Hutchinson had looked really good in practice and could give his team as good a shot to win as Pavlik. So, I mean, to me, it wasn't. I mean, the only other thing I could see is the fact that he really wants to look good in Toronto. You know, I mean, he coached there, so he says, okay, well, I want to kind of. It's good for him if he can kind of bloody Toronto up a little bit,
and that's
and
fine.
Knock them out.
It's long as you don't say I want to put my best lineup out there and then don't do it the next day.
Yeah, but again, like I said, the only thing is that Buff and Ladd were both injury, so they're the only reason that those guys couldn't go on Monday. And really, it becomes a Hutchinson versus Pavlik argument, and then the question is that much of an argument right now?
Well, I mean, you could argue who's better is not better. I mean, nobody knows anything about Hutchinson.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And I don't disagree with Richie, but at the end of the day, Maurice was right. They won the game.
Yeah,
so
no,
even though the motives, I don't disagree with you, his rationale worked out for him. But his rationale, what you're saying, is flawed.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the rationale. I just didn't jive with me. Anyhow, guys, I want to leave the Jets. They're playing Boston tomorrow. We're going to break down that game with Jack Edwards at 6:30 tonight. I want to talk about the big news out of Vancouver, though, because it's been an endless drama there.
Yep.
Mike Gillis finally gets fired. Really hours after the Vancouver Canucks fans were chanting Fire Gillis at the end of the Anaheim-Vancouver game the other night, Francisco Aquilini and the Aquilini family decides that Mike Gillis is no longer the right GM for this squad. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are, this is not surprising me at all.
Yeah.
Ben Kuzma is someone who we have on the show quite often from the Vancouver province, the same newspaper that Ed Willis is from. We're having him on in about an hour and a half. And he said that he wouldn't be surprised if both Mike Gillis and John Tortorella were fired. Now, I think we all agreed that Mike Gillis was probably the first chip to fall here. But when you look at how bad things have gone, and we've been talking about this for about 3 months, maybe less, maybe when the Canucks lost to the Jets, that's kind of when it started. Remember, that was Tortorella's last game of that five-game suspension based on that incident against Calgary, Richie. But when you look at how bad things became, because the Canucks were not a team that was competing for a top four, even top six spot. They were going to just barely make it into the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. And the way things went so sour, they basically put themselves, they shot themselves in the foot, put themselves in a position where really they weren't a factor here down the stretch here. And then when you factor in that Roberto Luongo was traded when nobody expected that, and then you throw in Ryan Kesler, who allegedly, we don't know this, allegedly wants a trade out of town. When you combine all these things, it went from bad to worse, and then it became about what's going on in Vancouver with the culture of that team.
That's right.
And that's why the Aquilini family saw the way things were going, looked at this, and said, Mike Gillis, thanks for your 6 years, but we're going in a different direction. We're bringing Trevor Linden in.
You probably say the downfall, it might have started earlier, but it reached the pinnacle when Mike Gillis, or whoever was responsible for hiring John Tortorella, did hire John Tortorella. This is a quote from Francesco Aquilini on that hiring.
Mike hired Tortorella, and I supported that decision. And I have to take responsibility for that. And that's why we have a change in direction today.
It depends on who you talk to, but many people think that's not what happened, and that Francesco Aquilini was the one behind hiring John Tortorella. We'll probably find out, and it'll work its way around the National Hockey League if it hasn't already. But that, to me, was the moment where this all went the wrong way, because Mike Gillis, it appeared, wasn't hiring his guy. I will say one thing, though, Dave, before I get you in here. There was a ton of talk about John Stevens being the guy. And John Stevens is a well-liked guy coaching the Philly Phantoms. You know, did a solid job in Philadelphia and has done a very nice job in L.A. with Daryl Sutter. But you wonder, would he have come in and coached similar to Daryl Sutter? Because if so, that's more of a defensive style than the whole puck possession style that Mike Gillis was saying that he wanted. So again, there's a lot of contradictory comments made here. And like Mike Gillis talks about getting back, or talked about getting back to a certain style of play, puck possession play, which I could go on and on about that. But the point at the end of the day was, Mike Gillis, you traded a bunch of guys who were good at that for some tougher players and from different players, right? To try and mix it up for Zach Cassian and different guys. So if you're expounding the virtues, you have to at least, you have to follow what you're saying. And it's so everybody seems to be saying two different things. I don't get it.
It's complete chaos in Vancouver. Yeah. I mean, like, you don't really know what is up and what is down. And the fact of the matter is, like you said, Richard, we're not going to know right away what is the truth and what isn't. And so you have to kind of go by what you're reading and what you're seeing. And what you're reading and what you're seeing is simply, amazing to think that this is a team that went to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, and how quickly all the things kind of, the wheels came off the ship. And it's just simply remarkable.
How do you think Mike Gillis's tenure in Vancouver will be defined?
That's a good question, because everybody knows that the Vancouver Canucks were at a certain point, and obviously it's the 2011 Stanley Cup Finals, were at a point where they were legitimate Stanley Cup contenders, a game away from a Stanley Cup. So we know that his tenure will be defined as having that success for the team. Now, as far as his moves go, and I know, Richie, you wrote about this and you wanted to talk about it next segment and including this segment if we have time here. I know we're right up against the break here. But Mike Gillis, as far as his moves, a lot of them were just retaining players that came from that Brian Burke era. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about trades, the Zach Cassian trade for Cody Hodgson, and Cassian, I think we would agree at this point, is not a first-line guy, not a top-six guy.
Yep.
He's a grinder. And I think Cassian's a guy that can – he's had some injury problems this year, but he's not a guy that you can trade for Cody Hodgson, a guy that's arguably would be their second-line center this year for his offensive talent. So to answer your question, I think his tenure – is going to be tainted by what's happened at the end here with the goalies. And I think you can't ignore the fact that Vancouver went in 3 years from 2011 going to the Stanley Cup Finals to a team that missed the playoffs, but still with a group that's got lots of talent and two number one goalies that were traded and that whole mess
combined for very little.
And we all know that the goalie that he wanted to keep all along was Corey Schneider, and Bo Horvat's a good prospect, but right now, and sure, the Devils missed the playoffs, but right now, the fact that you don't have two better goalies goalies that are better. Eddie Lack's a good goalie, and Jacob Markstrom, but Corey Schneider and Roberto Luongo, I think most teams would take those players. I think his tenure will be defined by his inability to find a second-line center and deal with that goaltending problem.
When we come back, there's more to talk about in Vancouver. I still want to get Dave's take on the tenure of Mike Gillis in Vancouver. We want to talk about Trevor Linden being hired as president of hockey operations and alternate governor there. And then the question also, we have to talk about this. What happens with John Tortorella? I mean, you could do a three-hour show on the Vancouver Canucks and the disarray in British Columbia. So we'll do two segments on it at least. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I always love when Remus is pulling out the 90s stuff. This is, you know, this is Rage. Get a little Tom Morello touring with my boy Bruce Springsteen. You caught that new album. It's an interesting album. It's unique. High hopes.
I think the fact that you got to see Bruce Springsteen, yeah. Tom Morello, and Eddie Vedder, right?
Same concert, Wrigley Field, yeah.
You don't get any better than that.
You don't get any better than that. That's the voice of Ezra Ginsberg. I'm Richard Pollack, filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel for the next few shows. David Manouk and Michael Remus also in studio. Just a reminder, next week, next Wednesday at 6 o'clock is the final NHL midweek of the season. We're taking the summer off on Wednesdays, but we will be with you on Saturdays. This Saturday, we move to 9 a.m., and we're 9 a.m. through the remainder of the spring. So if you're looking for us, the Jays are going to be on, the Blue Jays will be on TSN 1290 in the afternoon. We're going to be on 9 a.m. on Saturdays from here on out. Vancouver Canucks, we were talking about them before the break. I alluded to the fact that Francisco Aquilini and the Aquilini family hired Trevor Linden, number 16, as a president of hockey operations and alternate governor. We know how much Trevor Linden, you know, personifies what the Vancouver Canucks organization is all about, and he talked about that today when he was hired.
Today is a real honor. I came to Vancouver 26 years ago, and I've never left. I love this city. It is my home, and the Canucks have always been a big part of my family.
He sounded a little bit nervous there, actually, and I bet you he is, because that's a big job he just took. He's been managing some gyms in Vancouver with his name, but this is a different opportunity, obviously, and one that, you know, the likes of Joe Sakic, Steve Yzerman, and some other stars of his generation were able to undertake and have been quite successful at that. What do you think of the hiring of Trevor Linden?
I don't think there was any secret that Trevor Linden was out there. And I think that when the season really went downhill, his name was mentioned. Marcus Naslund's name was mentioned. He, of course, has been the GM of Modo, the team that he used to play for in Sweden. His name is mentioned as a possible GM. I know we'll talk about that in a little bit. But as far as Trevor Linden goes, you mentioned it, Richie, captain of the team for many years, was involved in the NHLPA, and you mentioned that he's had his business interest over the last few years since he retired. But he's a guy, very, very smart guy, and he might have been a little bit nervous, but he's very well-spoken, and he went through that whole ordeal with the lockout in previous years, not the most recent one, of course. But Trevor Linden's a guy that I think that everybody was a little bit curious that he wasn't more involved with the team in either a director of player personnel role, because maybe not assistant general manager. Lawrence Gilman is still there. He's been the assistant general manager there for a while, but I like the hire for so many reasons. Trevor Linden knows hockey. And
do we know that, though? Well, I mean, we know he knows how to play hockey. He plays a great player. But do we know he knows how to run a team?
Well, that's the question right now. And he is running the hockey ops department. And he knows that his biggest decision now is to find a general manager. Because he's in a similar situation that Brian Burke was in, and he didn't hire general manager for obvious reasons because of the fact that Feaster was already there, not his hire.
But he wants the
job. Absolutely, absolutely not, Richie. If you look at the Joe Sakic, Steve Yzerman, I guess you could throw in Cam Neely in there.
Waugh has a role as a personnel guy.
Those former players that are now either head coaches or general managers, those players had worked in player development, so they can really get their feet wet. And he hasn't done that. But he knows hockey in the sense that he's been around both the business side and the playing side essentially his whole career up until his retirement, and then he's gone into the business side. And we of course, don't know how he is at dealing at this level. But I think that they're completely confident in him, and he's confident enough in himself to take on this role and really turn this ship around.
He's going to be looking to hire a general manager, so he's going to have some power, but you wonder what it's going to be like. Is it going to be like LaFontaine Murray? Or obviously, they're hoping not. But let's hear what what Trevor Linden has to say about hiring a general manager.
That's a process that I have to kind of thoroughly evaluate. It's already begun, but we will do a general manager search from within and from outside of our organization.
Outside and within. So, I mean, that would make you think that Lawrence Gilman is going to be considered. He's the assistant general manager in Vancouver.
Yep, from Winnipeg.
Yeah, from Winnipeg. And you wonder, you know, Vancouver signed a lot of good contracts. I mean, you could say what you want about Mike Gillis and Lawrence Gilman and their tenure there, and they did a lot of good things.
Well, minus Luongo.
Minus Luongo. And then
he's gone, though.
Yes, that's right. That's a good point, Ezzy. A lot of other contracts they signed were quite favorable. It'll be interesting to see how much consideration they put to keeping the hire in-house, considering the fact that today, certainly no coincidence, that today was season ticket renewal deadline day in Vancouver. And they have the second longest standing season ticket sellout streak in professional sports right now. Here's what Trevor Linden has to say about hiring a general manager and what he's looking for in that general manager.
We would aim to have a manager in place, certainly by the draft, hopefully before that. Middle of June would be ideal. Early June would be better. As far as the criticism part, I've kind of been like the backup quarterback the last few years, right? You know, everyone loves the backup quarterback because he hasn't made any mistakes yet. You know, that's part of it. I mean, I fully recognize what I'm getting into. I know that this market is passionate about the game. I know that there's an educated group of you folks that have opinions, but I wouldn't want it any other way. I think to have the opportunity to work in this market that cares about this team, that is passionate about the game, that wants to win, that's totally switched on, I can't ask for a better situation.
He's genuine. Trevor Linden is genuine, and he's so well-liked in Vancouver, Dave. I mean, PR-wise, they can't go wrong with this, can they?
No, I mean, it's a home run. I mean, when you get a player who has that sort of, you know, cachet in a city like Vancouver, you know, they're not going to be tarring feathering Trevor Linden. So it was definitely a good move. And again, like you just said, it was smart considering that it's season ticket renewal and you have to get your fan base excited about something. And when you're missing the playoffs, it's hard to get excited. So this could be it could give the city a little bit of hope that their team is moving back towards the right direction.
And I think that going back to the lack of experience, and I think you're right, Richie, that is something that you have to factor in here. But I think, you know, when you look at his familiarity with this city, this franchise, everything, I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than Trevor Linden. I mean, sure, they've had some other great players, Stan Smeal, Marcus Naslund, all that. But Trevor Linden, and he's gone into business, and he has that background from the player's side as well as the business side. I think it is a good move, and I have confidence that he will make the right decision. And I do think that he's in this for the long haul, and it looks like a good move today.
We're going to ask Jack Edwards of Ness in next segment about the Canucks, because you could say the Bruins played a factor in this downfall. Game 7, remember 2011 Game 7? And Game 6 when Boston won those last two games. And if you remember, the next season, Vancouver goes into Boston playing really well. After that game, just tumbled and seemingly never recovered. So we're going to talk to Jack Edwards after the break. But quickly, before we go to break, just a note for our listeners. Blake Wheeler, former Boston Bruin, will be signing autographs from 4 to 5 p.m. this Sunday, April 13th, at Geno's newest show home on 24 Waterstone Drive in the South Point development. So if you want to bring your kids, get to meet Blake Wheeler. He's had a great season. He was traded from Boston with Mark Stewart. Trivia question. For Rich Peverly. And who else has?
Ooh.
Remus has it here. Remus, you got it?
Boris Valbek.
Who they thought might be Junior Chara.
Hold on. What about that trivia question I asked you yesterday from the panel?
That was a good one. We'll ask the listeners out there. Yeah. But now you can cheat with Google. It's so much harder to know what people actually know.
No Googling.
Jack Edwards of Nesson after this.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast. On TSN1290.ca.
6:30. On a pretty nice Winnipeg night, I'd say. Based on the weather we've had all year so far. Welcoming spring, but the Jets, of course, are not going to the Stanley Cup playoffs, unfortunately. The final home game of the season, though, is tomorrow night against the big bad Boston Bruins, who are, you know, playing just as well as anyone and are as deep and as fun to watch as you're going to find in the National Hockey League.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Who better to bring on to talk about the Boston Bruins than Jack Edwards of Nesson? And Nesson actually celebrating the 30th anniversary this year. Jack, how are you?
Doing great. It's, you know, it's a kind of a weird week for the Bruins because the President's Trophy would be nice, but it's not a real priority. They're systematically resting guys, and, you know, it's almost like they're playing out the string, and it's a weird vibe around the team right now because, you know, they're very focused about the playoffs, but they're sort of focused on next Thursday rather than tomorrow night.
It's interesting, Jack. And before we get into the Bruins, I wanted to ask you, just because you're so close to the team, and the way the Boston Bruins beat the Vancouver Canucks in Game 7, the really dominating performance in Game 7 of 2011, and then you'll remember, of course, you called the game, the Vancouver-Boston game the following year. It seems like after those 2 points, the Vancouver Canucks were never the same. Can you maybe speak about that before we get into the Bruins this season so far?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and you know, I would even take it back to Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final because Vancouver had played virtually airtight defense in the first 2 games, and the Bruins were playing pretty well in Game 3, but it was up for grabs when Aaron Rome, you know, took Nathan Horton out of the series, and you know, and you can actually trace it to that point that the Bruins gelled. And they found their game, and they never looked back. And, you know, even though it did go 7, Boston was clearly the more dominant team of the two in the Stanley Cup Final. And Vancouver had so much invested emotionally in that regular season game that was just that whack job game in Boston that it kind of spoke to Vancouver's inability to put the defeat behind them, as the Bruins have put the defeat to Chicago last year behind them. You know, Vancouver's inability to say, you know what, a better team beat us. We're going to try to learn from it and get better. And I actually trace the downward path of the Vancouver Canucks all the way back to that moment when Rome hit Nathan Horton. And, you know, maybe it was a different point or maybe it was just a long series of events. But, you know, the Canucks were 2 games away from winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And now look at them. I mean, it's a mess.
It's a mess is right.
Jack, we got to ask you about Jerome Iginla, 12th 30-goal season, second on the team in scoring. I guess two-part question. What has impressed you most about Jerome Iginla after covering him all season? And I know that he's had a little injury problem here. Is he? Can Jets fans expect to see him tomorrow night, or is he going to sit out?
I'll bet he's going to play. Well, I don't. You know, it's hard to tell. They called up Ryan Spooner from Providence, the Bruins did, on an emergency basis, which indicates that they only have 11 healthy forwards because that's the only reason you can make an emergency call-up.
Right.
You know, you don't want to rest Iginla too long, and he skated pretty hard before yesterday's normal morning skate, so I think he's pretty close. If they hold him out, it's purely because they want to rest him a little bit more, but after tomorrow night, the Bruins just have back-to-back games on the weekend, so I wouldn't think they're going to play him back-to-back after having a chance to play him, like, say, Thursday, Saturday, and rest him on Sunday, or Thursday, Sunday, and rest him on Saturday. That said, I've openly had a man crush on Jerome Iginla for more than a decade.
He's your type of player.
You know, I'm the first to admit it. When he was playing for Calgary, I said that if he had been playing in a major Eastern American city, that he would have been one of the biggest stars, not only in the NHL, but in all of sport because of the way the guy conducts himself. And to me, that is the single most impressive thing. It's, you know, we knew he had the incredible work ethic. We knew that he had a tremendous scoring touch. We knew that his compete level is off the charts. And we knew that he had a lot of tread on the tires. You know, nobody in Boston is worried about the 36-year-old thing. You know, Iginla plays as hard as any 18 or 19-year-old in the league. The thing that impresses me the most is how absolutely focused he is every moment of every day, not just on the ice but off the ice, to do the right thing and to make things better around him. You know, and I've actually come up with this weird theory about why Calgary is as terrible as it is. And it's because Ginla has so much integrity that for those 5 or 6 last years that he was there, when they were hopelessly out of the playoffs, that he refused to glide. He refused to mail it in even one time. And he and Kiprusoff stole so many points that Calgary had no business stealing simply because they refused to mail it in, that team ended up out of that lottery spot where, you know, you might get a real stud who could change the future of your franchise, and yet they wouldn't be quite good enough to make the playoffs, which makes everybody on your team better just because they get the playoff experience. So they'd end up in like 9th, 10th, or 11th almost every year, only because Ginla refused to mail it in. You know, if he'd mailed it in for a couple of months, Calgary would probably be in a lot better position now than it is.
Jack, with only 6 points in his last 20 games for Riley Smith, what's been the reason for his struggles?
It's really his first full NHL season. You don't want to really call him a rookie because he had last year with Dallas, but this is his first 82-game stretch, and he hit a real flat spot, but in the last week or 10 days, his game has improved a lot. And the Bruins don't use points as a metric. They really look at the way you play in your defensive zone, the way you make plays in special teams, if you are on special teams, and Riley Smith is a prominent part of the Boston power play, and how you work with your line mates. It's interesting that Patrice Bergeron referred to Marty Lapointe and to Glenn Murray, who helped Bergeron early in his career when he would hit flat spots, and he said he's tried to do that for Riley Smith and try to, you know, tell him to keep his head up and things are going to get better, and they have for Riley Smith. It's cause for concern. It's legitimate, and especially going into the playoffs where you know that Smith is going to encounter something that he's never seen before and he's going to have to reach a different level. But people seem to think that he's going in the right direction. I haven't heard too much worry. There is concern, but not a lot of worry.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Jack Edwards of Ness & Nesson, celebrating their 30th anniversary this year. And Jack is, of course, in town to broadcast the Bruins at the Jets at MTS Center tomorrow, which you can hear on TSN 1290 starting at 7 p.m. Jack, the development of Carl Soderberg has been certainly an interesting one in Boston and only increasing the already great depth of the forward core. Can you talk about his development? And can you also talk about the corresponding move of Chris Kelly to the wing and how he's sacrificed for the team?
Yeah, you know, a very interesting story with Soderberg. The Bruins had a surplus of goalies and traded Hannu Toivonen to St. Louis 1-for-1 for Soderberg quite a while ago. Soderberg didn't feel he was ready to play in North America, really didn't want to come from the Swedish Elite League to play in the American Hockey League. And so he stayed in Sweden, and Peter Chiarelli, the general manager of the Bruins, was almost extraordinarily patient with the guy. And people in Boston were starting to wonder, like, what is it? I mean, why is this guy so special that you're just not cutting the bait and let it fall into the water and move on? But we've found out now, because Soderberg came to the Bruins late last season, really wasn't in game shape because he had 4 weeks off after his Swedish Elite League season had ended. And so he didn't get a lot of action in the playoffs. This year with a full training camp, clearly was an NHL player and made a contribution out of camp at left wing. The reason they have him on left wing at the beginning of the season is because Soderberg is legally blind in his left eye because he took a stick in the eye, and that's why he wears the largest visor you can wear legally in the NHL without having a facial injury and a waiver for it. Through circumstance and a couple of injuries, he ended up playing a few games at center, and he was unbelievable when they put him in the middle of the ice, and everybody thought that, you know, he was going to have difficulty in the middle of the ice, but he's actually been better. He has a tremendous stride, a very powerful skater. His first 2 strides give him separation on almost every player in the league, which has been a real eye-opener for all of us. Consequently, Chris Kelly, who has been the center on that line, has moved to wing. And Kelly bouncing back and forth, you know, that, even for a veteran guy like Kelly who's in his 10th season, I think it's 10 anyway, it's you know, it's a difficult adjustment to make, but You know, he's totally professional about it. He understands that it's for the best interest of the team, and he just, you know, he does whatever the coaching staff asks him to do. That's kind of a big picture told through the small story of how mm-hmm. Bruins team functions.
Yeah.
They put individual glory at the very bottom of their priority list.
Jack, David asked you earlier about Riley Smith, so we have to ask you about the other guy that came over from the Dallas Stars, Louis Erickson, who's been playing quite a bit with Carl Soderberg on that third line. From watching Louis Erickson play, it seems like he's getting more comfortable. Why did it take him so while to get comfortable, and do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I do agree with that, and he's playing his best hockey this season right now. The Olympic break helped him a lot because he got some high-quality reps with the Swedish national team, and he needed them because there was a lot of rust on him. That's because Louis Erickson's game, in an oversimplified nutshell, is brains and hands. And his brains were scrambled for a lot of this season. He's had two concussions mm-hmm. this season, and he's missed close to 30 games because of his recovery time from those concussions. The Bruins, originally having the experience with Patrice Bergeron in the fall of 2007, are unbelievably conservative bringing guys back from concussion. So after the second one, they were really slow to bring Erickson back into the lineup. But since the Olympics, he has been so good. He thinks the game really well. It's the subtle things like, you know, making sure he reaches forward with his stick on the rush to get the puck over the blue line to make sure it isn't offside when they're rushing into the zone 3-on-2, when he does the little self-passes off the boards or angles his stick for a little one-touch redirection pass, he's a tremendous thinker of the game. And he also will grind in the defensive zone, which, you know, the guy for whom he was traded mm-hmm. is not known for, yeah. In Tyler Seguin.
Jack, where do you rank Torrey Krug among Calder Trophy candidates?
You know, based on the first half of his year, I'd say he's still probably second behind MacKinnon. He's made a really meaningful contribution to a team in an area in which the team desperately needed a contribution. The Bruins power play for the last 3 years preceding this season has been nothing short of bad and actually terrible at times. And Krug's insertion into one of those power play units has made them dangerous in a lot of situations, and they can use the power play as a weapon instead of just, well, this is 2 minutes in which the opponent won't score. And, you know, I'm really not being facetious about that. There were times over the previous 3 seasons that was really how Bruins fans looked at a Bruins power play, because they just weren't creating. And Krug has done a lot of that good creative work, but I think you got to look at Nathan MacKinnon and say, man, that's a really, really special first-year player, and he deserves the Calder.
Yeah, he's incredible. We're talking to Jack Edwards of Nesson, talking about the Boston Bruins, who are in town tomorrow night to play the Winnipeg Jets, the final Jets home game of the season, which you can hear on TSN 1290. Jack, you know, you mentioned Tyler Seguin. We haven't mentioned Phil Kessel, but the other player in that deal, amongst other draft picks, is Dougie Hamilton, and he's put up some nice offensive numbers, but we knew that his defense is really what needed the most work. How has his defensive game progressed throughout this season?
It's gotten a lot better, and it's actually been at its very best in the last 2 weeks. He's had a couple of games that have been a little dicey, but for the most part, considering we're looking at a 20-year-old playing, you know, often first-pair defense alongside Zdeno Chara, he's really picked it up. He understands his diagonal slides where he's got to cover for his defensive pair. He knows when to eat the puck. He hasn't been turning it over in bad places a lot. He still does it every once in a while, as young players tend to do. But Hamilton has learned tremendously from playing with Chara and also from being coached up by Claude Julien and Doug Huda. He's made real strides, and he's getting comfortable in his own skin at the NHL level. You can see it even when you interview him, that he's finding his comfort zone, and he's believing in himself. And that's really because the team has taken such care in preparing him for his job and in teaching him and bringing him up throughout each of his seasons. He's he's got a really, really bright future. And, you know, you look at his pedigree and you say, wow, you know, this kid's just 20, mm-hmm. and he's probably not going to peak till he's about 26. When you come to the rink trying to get better every single day, as he has shown that he will do, that's a pretty optimistic future.
Jack, we're going to keep it going here with defensemen. I saw a quote from your colleague on Nesson, of course, Andy Brickley. He was talking about Andre Mezeros on the website, and he was saying that he's been pretty good, but he's still a seventh guy. Do you agree with that? And how has he played since the acquisition? Do you think he's going to get to play a lot in the playoffs?
He's been okay. My guess is that he is the seventh guy and that he's in a standby position for when, not if, but when one of those defensemen gets hurt. Obviously, the Bruins, if Chara or Boychuk were to go down, there's a hole that they can't fix. That's, you know, on top of the Seidenberg injury, that would really, really be a sore spot for the Bruins. It would be huge trouble for the team. But Mazaros has played both the left side and the right side. He's played some power play for them. He's played very limited penalty kill for them. But he's shown versatility and a decent contribution. He hasn't been a game changer. He hasn't been a guy who has taken over shifts. He hasn't been dominant in his defensive zone, but they didn't think he was going to be any of those things when they picked him up. They picked him up to be a guy that could be plugged in a variety of spots in case they need him. And so far he has been that.
Final question for you, Jack. You know, I personally think the Bruins are the best team in the Eastern Conference, but who do you think is the biggest threat to take out the Bruins in the East?
Wow, good question. You know, there are a couple of teams that immediately come to mind because of matchups and personnel, and one could be a first-round matchup in Detroit if the math falls just right. Mm-hmm. Right now it looks as if it's going to be Columbus for the Bruins, but it could be Detroit. The Red Wings, especially if they continue to get players back in their lineup, are a team that could give Boston problems. They're a tremendous possession team, highly skilled team, a veteran team that knows how to win in the playoffs, and Jimmy Howard is capable of standing on his head. You put all those elements together, that could be trouble. The other team is Montreal, and mm-hmm. Montreal is a team that has given the Bruins fits because of the matchup. They're quick, they're tenacious, they're opportunistic on offense, and they got a great goalie in Carey Price. So, you know, those are probably the two teams in the East that you would look at and say, you know, those could be trouble. But the thing I love best about the Stanley Cup playoffs is be prepared to be surprised. You know, you never can write the script in advance because it always unfolds in some impossible way that you walk away saying, it's unbelievable how much I love this game because the more I know about it, the more I realize, the less I know.
you're exactly right, Jack. Thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy the game tomorrow night.
It's always great. And, guys, you know, we worked the schedule pretty well to get here on this day because I know it's been a brutal winter, but nice to be with you now.
Yeah, Jack, earlier this week it was pretty cold in Winnipeg, so we made sure that the weather was nice for your arrival.
I give you full marks for that. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Jack Edwards of Nesson breaking down the Bruins. You're going to see tomorrow night, and you can hear tomorrow night on TSN 1290. When we come back, a little bit more on the Vancouver Canucks. What are they going to do with their coaching situation? And then the second hour, we're going to talk about the Leafs and a bunch of other things. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You tell me a more passionate hockey play-by-play guy than Jack Edwards, and I'd like to see who that is. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Richard Pollock, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and of course, Michael Remus. Before we continue with our discussion about the Canucks, again, you could go on and on about the Vancouver Canucks. This segment's brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus in the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or at www.lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Like I did triple W there, it's because of Drew.
Yeah.
Drew does that, so I got to do that.
That's fine. That's fair.
Vancouver Canucks. We talked about Trevor Linden hire. We talked about, you know, the GM search. and what he's going to do there. And we really don't know what he's going to do there, to be honest with you. But it's more intriguing, really, to find out what he's going to do about John Tortorella. And he had some interesting comments, Trevor Linden did, at his introductory press conference today. Let's listen in.
The timing of this allows me to fully evaluate the coaching staff. I met John this morning for the first time, so I come into it with a fresh set of eyes. I understand the challenges with coaching. I've been a player for 20 years. I look forward to sitting down with the players after the season and fully understanding the ins and outs of their issues and their season. But those decisions will be made down the road. Obviously, critical path is assessing a general manager and look at the structure of our hockey operations, and whether it be on the pro side or the amateur side, all those decisions have to be evaluated. And any sort of coaching decision will be made in due time after thorough evaluation.
A couple of things that are interesting. I think first, before we get to you guys, quickly before break, Farhan Lalji of TSN reporting that maybe Mike Gillis and John Tortorella both have clauses in their contracts that they can be fired and only have half of their salary paid out. So not the $8 million each remaining on their deals, but $4 million, which would obviously make it more enticing for the Canucks ownership and new management to make that move. One thing I just thought of while listening to that was, if you recall correctly, I believe I am correct, Trevor Linden was traded by Mike Keenan. And we had Jim Jameson on the show from the Vancouver province a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago now. And he said there are some similarities between Mike Keenan and John Tortorella. I don't think Keenan and Linden had the best relationship. Linden doesn't fit. Tortorella doesn't fit the mold of a guy that I think Trevor Linden would want there. That's my opinion. What do you guys think?
Right, and obviously what factors into that, Richie, is what GM... I think the sequence of events that we anticipate is the GM is hired and then the coach is fired. That doesn't mean that has to happen.
Why don't you just fire the coach if you don't like him anyways, and then you let the GM just come in and not have to fire anyone?
And I think that's a good point. And then everything Trevor Linden's saying is that he will bring in the general manager. And I don't think it's going to be long, by the way. He said early June he'd like it. I wouldn't be surprised if it was even within the next couple of weeks. If he knows who... And then, sure, he has to put his candidate list together and all that, but we know that there is a short list already, right? So when you talk about Tortorella, comes in... And this year could not have gone worse. And it's not just the Canucks missing the playoffs. It's what happened, the incident with Calgary and his suspension, mm-hmm. and what's happened with alienating the players and the injuries and everything. This season has just been one big, terrible, terrible letdown. So when you talk about the coach, and I think I agree with you, Richie, I don't necessarily know that Trevor Linden is a huge fan of John Tortorella. And we heard rumors that, you know, Jay Feaster might come in. Who knows?
I don't see that happening.
I don't see it either. I think there's a shorter list than that. And when you talk about Tortorella, the argument that he's only been given 1 year, but look what happened in that 1 year. So I'm looking at it, and you know I'm not a big Torts fan.
You guys had an incident.
We did have an incident, but I'm not a big Torts fan. I think what he's done with this team, as he's gone in there, and just because he's had success in Tampa Bay and the Rangers, you can't take that away from him. He's had a lot of success. He's worked with USA Hockey, but he's gone in there. Look what's happened in 1 year. It's just so, and he has a lot to do with that because the players haven't changed much.
I'm putting my money on Trevor Linden firing John Tortorella before he hires a new GM. Just clean slate. Let the new GM do what he's going to do. Not have to worry about the distraction and the questions that come with firing a head coach right after you are hired. When we come back, 1 hour down already. It's going by quick. When we come back, on TSN right now is the Blackhawks against the Habs. Andre Markov, pending UFA, and he'll be the feature of our UFA of the Week discussion. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, David Minuk, and Michael Remus in studio. Last game of the season tomorrow night, Jets against Bruins, and we just spoke to Jack Edwards, in the first hour of the show. Ed Willis, former Winnipeg Sun writer, the old Jets 1.0, will be joining us at 7:45 to talk about the Vancouver Canucks, which we spent, you know, most of the last hour discussing what went on there with the firing of Mike Gillis and the hiring of Trevor Linden. Now, Trevor Linden did play in Montreal, and Montreal is where we're shifting our focus to for our segment UFA of the Week. And our target today is Andre Markov. Andre Markov is, you know, one of the best offensive defensemen probably of his generation, guys. He consistently puts up points. And he's been with the Habs since 2000. That's the year he broke in. And he's put up points, 58 points 1 year, 64 points 1 year, you know, almost always around 40. He's consistently, you know, if healthy, produces offense. And as he's coming up, you know, he's coming up on a UFA status, obviously. He's going to be 36 years old in December. What do you think happens with Andre Markov? You know, what do you think he brings to the table? And what do you think he gets on the open market if you think he gets there?
Richie, you mentioned offense, and he obviously brings offense to the table. And Markov has kind of quietly had a big year. Another guy just off topic that has 39 goals that I think more people should be talking about is Pacioretty. Mm-hmm. But you look at Andre Markov, and the problem has been the health. And he hasn't missed a game the last 2 years. He played a full season last year, and he hasn't missed a game this year. When you go back to a couple of years ago, 2010, 2011, he almost missed the whole season, both seasons. He only played 20 games, 25 games. Andre Markov, as you mentioned, one of the most dynamic offensive defensemen in the league. He's a great skater, and we know the chemistry he's created with PK Subban on the power play in
Montreal.
He's
slowed down a lot, though.
He has slowed
down. He's not a fast skater.
And we really pointed that out in the Olympics. You could tell that Andre Markov is no longer good enough to be the anchor of that Russian blue line internationally. Really, guys like Slava Voyanov, Fedor Tutin, other guys are really, at this point, guys that you can turn to more. Now, Andre Markov has great vision on the ice. Great distributor of the puck. He's a guy that I feel like, even though he has those injury concerns, to me what's most impressive is, again, the fact that he's been healthy and he's been giving them that solid play, and they've actually split up him and Subban and play him with Emelin quite a bit. But he offers them just offensive capabilities that, quite frankly, just don't grow on trees, and you really can't give up. And I look at this summer, and this is a huge summer for the Montreal Canadiens, because now with PK Subban, his bridge deal is over, because you remember he signed the bridge deal. And with that contract, and then Markov, what are you going to do?
What about Vanek?
And then you've got Vanek. And does Vanek want to play in Montreal? Does he want to go back to Minnesota, as all the rumors indicate, and because of the ties there? But for me, what Andre Markov offers, I don't think you can let him go. And I know that PK Subban offers a lot, but Andre Markov, again, has improved his defensive play, because earlier on in the season, he's still a guy that, even though he's not physical, he can play a lot of minutes. I think his minutes have gone down quite a bit from the heyday when he was putting up bigger numbers. But Richie, look at his numbers, and he's still got 43 points.
Still leads him an ice time over the course of the year.
43 points. And that's kind of a quiet 43 points from a guy who's had, you know, 60 before. So Andre Markov, to me, offers so much offensively, and it's such a leader of this team. Mm-hmm. As Dave mentioned during the break, we were talking about, he's been on the Habs now for 13 years. So he's one of the leaders of this team. And to me, I would expect them to sign him. And really, as we always talk about here, especially with Markov, is, as opposed to some of the other guys, Camilleri, that might go elsewhere, I think this is a guy that they want to keep around, maybe offer him a 2 or 3 year deal, and he can finish his career here.
Well, I think it ends
Montreal,
up
that is,
coming down to a 1 or 2 year deal is. I think Markov might even want 3. He's going to ask for 3. I think the Habs probably wanted 1, but you make a very good point about his, you know, how dependable he's been over the past 2 years. Interesting to note that Andre Markov has made $5.75 million cap hit since 2007, and that's two different contracts. So 2007 through 2011, he made $5.75 million on a four-year deal.
Pretty good deal for the Habs.
Yeah, and then the last 3 years, he's made $5.75 million on a three-year deal. So you think to yourself, over the past 7 seasons, he's made $5.75 million. Why don't we reach a compromise, pay him $5.75 million for the next 2 seasons? Seems reasonable to me.
And his numbers haven't gone up. And I'm talking about point totals. We talked about, it was 5 years ago, it was, I believe, 2009, let me bring it up here, 2008-2009, when he had the 64-point season. Before that, he had 58. This guy had 10 power play goals last year, and he still is a guy that they put out on the first power play unit. As we mentioned, he might have slowed down a bit, Richie, but when you're talking about a guy who's still top 10 in the league in defenseman scoring at age 35, you can't give that up. This is a crucial part of this team. Even though he's slowed down a little bit, he's still a guy that can move the puck extremely well, And as I mentioned, now he's part of that. This is still a very young team. You can't forget that.
Yes.
And you take if you take a guy like him off the roster, look what happened with the Islanders and Mark Streit. That significantly affected their team. So to me, he's a guy that you have to keep around for whether it's 1 or 2 years.
And talking about age and reliability, I mean, he's has the current Habs Ironman streak. I mean, he has played every game with the exception of tonight, actually. It ends tonight. They're sitting him against Chicago. Right. But with the exception of that, he's played in, like, I think 137 straight games for the Habs. So for a guy who was labeled as injury-prone, which he was for mm-hmm. a number of seasons, he's been pretty consistent in terms of being able to play and playing at a fairly high level. And while obviously it decreases as you get to a certain age, he's still able to, like you said, Richard, if they can meet in the middle and hit that kind of compromise, he's got a lot to still offer the Habs. He's, and they obviously, to him, because it's the only team that he's been with. So do you really want to try and test it out and say, especially considering the Habs are a contender, right? So you have a chance to play on a contender. You know, I mean, maybe he finds a better fit, but I mean, you know, it's the team that you know everything about them, and if they're willing to give you money that's comparable to somebody else, then you're most likely going to stay with the team that you've been with for, you know, your entire career.
And the way the Habs play the game, they play a speed game. They're really dangerous in transition. How do you affect that strategy? How do you do that? Well, you have puck-moving defensemen. And if you take PK Subban and or Andrei Markov off that team, the transition goes way down. You can't look at the rest of the guys they have on this roster. They're clearly your top two players on the back end, clearly in terms of puck movement. And if you lose one of them, you're in trouble. So you have to sign both of them, in my opinion. I agree with both of you. You have to sign both of them this offseason. You know, Subban's going to get his money, 7.5 a year for 5, 6, 7 years, 8 years even. That's the maximum they can sign him to. Markov will get 2 years on the market in a heartbeat. The question is, will somebody offer him 3 years? And if you look at the National Hockey League, I'd venture to guess somebody would, but as Dave mentions earlier, you know, he has an interest in staying there, and Pat Hickey's written about it in the Montreal Gazette about, you know, the discussions. I think that Markov's ability to contribute on the power play, puck movement, and even strength, and you mentioned as he's not the best skater anymore, fine, but he's always been a guy who's been able to get by without being the fastest guy on the ice. He's just smart, and you can't teach the smarts that he has, and it's that, along with, you know, playing the point on the power play and being able to play with a guy like Subban. You mentioned he's playing with Emelin now, but he's played with Subban before. These players all complement each other. And the veteran element, it's a slam dunk no-brainer to me. But if they let him go to July and he's still available, somebody is going to offer big money for him. And maybe they'll offer $7 million for 2 years, you know, $14 million bucks. There's less risk in that.
Well, Sergei Gonchar was offered a 2-year contract, but you look at the other guys, the young players on defense that the Montreal Canadiens have, Nathan Beaulieu and Jared Tenorti, those guys are more stay-at-home, big, physical defensemen. You can't replace, because you're not going to trade Andrei Markov, you're not going to be able to replace him. And that's why they will sign him. And you're most likely right, Richie, because of the prior injuries, they might be a little bit reticent to give him the 3-year deal. They'll give him a 2-year deal. But Markov is a guy that I think wants to stay there, and there's no indication that he doesn't. And as you mentioned, there have been preemptive talks there. So all signs point to he does sign another contract, and they are a team that not only are they going to finish a high in the Eastern Conference here, it's a team that's set up for the future with Brendan Gallagher and Galchenyuk, Tenorti and Beaulieu are good defensemen. They've got some other prospects in the system.
Carey Price is young.
So Markov isn't going anywhere.
Well, Montreal Canadiens are seem to be in pretty good shape going into not only the playoffs, which I think they're an underrated threat to make a run here, but as you mentioned, in the years to come. The Toronto Maple Leafs are another story. Who will be their coach next year? Who will be their GM next year? Some think it may not be Carlisle. Some think it may not be Nona. Some think both of them will be relieved of their duties. We're going to discuss that after the break. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Quarter after 7 on a beautiful Winnipeg evening. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, David Minuk, Michael Remus here on NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, the second last NHL Midweek of the season. Next week, we're going to be doing our wind-up, I guess it'll be.
Playoff Palooza.
At the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. We'll be live there in person, as will the rest of the station downtown at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. So join us if you like. We're going to do our playoff preview show on Saturday, and then we're going to be on Wednesday evening, next Wednesday, of course, when the playoffs start, which is 6 o'clock, and it's going to be, it's one of those every year, annual, every year it's something special about that first night of the playoffs. You just get that feeling like this is going to be a great run of 3 months of great hockey. You just hope the Jets eventually do make it. Before we get into the Toronto Maple Leafs, this segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Corden and Lanark in the Corden Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or bernsteinsdeli.com. And as he, you know, in the commercial that people might have heard, you were hosting Passover, and you can, of course, get your Passover catered, your Passover Seder catered by Bernstein's. Are you, you know, you're hosting, who are you inviting so far? Remus hasn't been invited, he told me.
No, Remus is invited. Actually, Huss is invited, Rick's invited. The only guy who's not invited is actually Lawless.
Oh, Lawless, yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
And you know what? He was upset that he wasn't invited to the WrestleMania party.
Yep.
For those who don't know, I had a WrestleMania. Well, I guess most people wouldn't know that. It wasn't the biggest party, but I had a WrestleMania party. Gary comes up to me in the press box on Monday night. He's mad that he wasn't invited to WrestleMania, but what I didn't tell Gary, and Gary knows, he wouldn't have come.
Yeah, he wouldn't have come.
You can't get mad at not getting invited. Not unlike last night when you guys went out and didn't invite me.
That's true.
We'll talk about that another time.
We will talk about that another time. Let's talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the question is, are they going to be inviting Randy Carlyle and Dave Nonis back to town? And Darren Dreger of TSN, you know, kind of alluded to the fact that he believes Randy Carlyle is going to be let go.
Guess what? It may not get much better next year. Where's the help coming from? There will be changes. Now, sure, Carlisle's likely going to be fired, but don't expect any, you know, big-time trades to shake this thing up.
So you don't expect big-time trades, but Carlyle being fired is a big-time
move.
Well,
the trade deadline passed. There's not going to be any. Nobody's going to be making any trades until the draft. So, I mean, you know, Richie, I know you want to cover a lot of things here, but this, I tweeted this out yesterday, and this isn't anything that anybody already knows. I kind of just put some numbers, dates on it. March 15th, the Toronto Maple Leafs were in third place in the East. Yesterday, they were eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs. Third to elimination in about 25 days.
Less than a month.
This fall, someone is going to be held accountable because it can't be players.
It can't be this spring, is he?
And it has to be. So, you know, Randy Carlyle, who we've talked about last week and previous weeks, basically the last few years since he was hired, great coach, and I'm a big fan of his. But the way things have gone down there, you have to think that there's a good chance he's let go.
I still think I've said this a couple weeks ago now on the show. I think that there's a possibility. I think it may be a very good possibility that Randy Carlyle, if fired, ends up coach of Winnipeg. I mean, that's no disrespect to Paul Maurice, but I think the relationships that he has with the management and ownership here will go a long way into allowing him to be no that obviously in his qualifications. He's won a Stanley Cup, and I think he's a very good coach. It hasn't turned up right in Toronto, and I know it was going a little bit sour at the end of the Anaheim run, but he had quite a run in Anaheim, and I think that he'll be strongly considered. I want to talk about that in a second, though. Dave, do you think that the prospect of him being let go, and Darren Dreger's pretty close to Toronto management, and he knows the stuff, obviously, TSN insider. Do you think the prospect of him being let go is fair?
Well, I mean, when a team doesn't make the playoffs, I think that they're forced to evaluate what happened and where did it all go wrong. And the players can, you know, as they did today, say that, you know, we didn't play well enough and we didn't do what we needed to do. But the question is, you know, is it the coach's responsibility? And ultimately, you know, it oftentimes is. Now, do I think it's fair to put us all on Randy Carlyle? Probably not. I mean, it seems to have, you know, but a lot of people would. And a lot of people would say that this is Randy Carlyle's mess and that the Leafs underperformed under him. And so, you know what, I'm kind of torn on this one.
Here's what Randy Carlyle had to say about his team's collapse.
Numb and shock, I guess, would be the words to describe. Extremely disappointed, shallow, embarrassed, all those things.
You know, he's got a lot of pride, and coaching in Toronto is kind of akin to being the president or prime minister. You know, you go in there, you're looking spry, you're feeling great. Especially in Anaheim, where the you know, there's obviously pressure to win anywhere, but the media pressure isn't what it is in Toronto. It's not even close. And you go into Toronto and you look weathered and you look tired and it's worn you down. It's a tough place to coach, and I think it, you know, the success Pat Quinn had there for years, I think was yeah. underrated.
Tough as nails, both on and off the ice as a coach. He can handle it. But you're right. You're talking about mentally.
I'm not saying Andy Carroll can't handle it. Just it's so difficult to coach there.
Right. And we know this because aside from, no, I think it is Toronto. Maybe Montreal. Montreal has a big media pack that rolls through the city.
Vancouver,
and
too.
And we always see that. Vancouver and some of the American teams. Philly has a big pack. Yep. But no, Toronto's the biggest. Mm-hmm. And they come with, it's like a media mafia.
It is.
The way they come at you. And Randy Carlyle, I think you look at this team, and Dave Nonis has to take some of the blame here. And you look at his basically doing nothing at the trade deadline. We talked about this. We've had Michael Tracos on, we've had Jonas Siegel on, and others. And I know they've had a lot of guys on the round table. And we've talked about this again and again about this team's defense. They needed a defenseman, and they needed something. And the goaltending was bad. James Reimer's had a bad year. I'm a big fan of James Reimer from Morwena, Manitoba. He's had a bad year. Bernier had the injury problems. But there are things here, guys. I know I've mentioned this before, and you look at a guy like Clark MacArthur, who went to Ottawa, had success. You look at Leo Komarov, these guys left. And it seemed like minor things, but they lost key pieces. Now, Nonis, the James Van Riemsdyk trade for Luke Schenn, I think that was one of his best moves.
That was Burke's move.
That was Burke's move. You're right, but he was still part of
management.
Part of the management. But under this group here, you look at what hasn't happened. The inability to bring in other players to fill roles. This is a one line team. Phil Kessel, I have absolutely no complaints about the way Phil Kessel, Tyler Bozak, or James Van Riemsdyk has played. Even Kadri's had a pretty good year. Maybe not at the same pace, but you look at after that. I mean, this is a team that lacks secondary scoring, and they lack a good group of defensemen. Paul Ranger. Mark Fraser goes
those
on
are
and
six, seven, they, those are 7-8 guys.
Right, but those guys and have played at times top four roles, and he didn't bring anybody in. So to me, Dave Nonis definitely has to be, I'm not saying he should be fired necessarily, but it's not just Randy Carlyle, it's about the team that he was given.
You know, it's hard to argue with what Ezzy said, because I mean, the truth is that the GM is the one who provides you with the tools, and then you can only work with what you've got. So, you know, when you look at where they were, I mean, Randy Carlyle had this team well positioned. And then, you know, the wheels fell off.
One game away, sorry, Dave, going to the second round last year. Maybe they go farther if they win the first round. Maybe they go to the finals.
And a lot of the people who write in Toronto, if you read what they say this team wasn't that good. So it's interesting. So, no, but what I'm getting at is this.
You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that.
No, and I'm not suggesting that they are. But what I'm saying is that if Randy Carlyle has taken a team that isn't that good and he's done this with them, then it clearly isn't Randy Carlyle that is the fault in Toronto. It's the team that he has.
I think this team has a bunch of holes. I think it lacks leadership to certain degrees. I think Dion Phaneuf, since he became captain, I think not necessarily his offensive numbers. Dion Phaneuf is a guy that does have flaws to his game.
And always
I think,
has.
And I think that, you know, this team needs definitely an influx of some different players. And you know that Randy Carlyle likes to play this tough kind of game. And we've had so many issues with Randy Carlyle dealing with certain players, whether it's Kadri and other players. And you look at some of the players, and is this a team that, sure, they go out and they get their goals, but defensively, this team is just not good enough.
The coverage on the Olli Jokinen goal last Saturday was a Boland, and I forget what other defensemen were going. We're not looking at Jokinen, and I thought to myself, wow, I mean, you're in game with 78, 77, whatever it was, and you guys can't cover the man in front. You know, you can blame the coach for that a bit, sure, but at some point, the players have to have some response, some to bear some of the responsibility. And that was Dave Boland, and now there's rumors today Dave Boland might be heading to Florida. That's the rumor, to reunite with Dale Tallon, and they have some money to spend this offseason. So that creates another hole at third-line center, which clearly, in my opinion, Peter Holland can't fill. So if Randy Carlyle is able to get a job this offseason and get fired in Toronto, that might be a blessing in disguise for him.
Right, and you look at the moves he's made, and let's forget the fact that David Clarkson got too much money. Just the players he brought in, David Clarkson and David Bull. But let's just forget about that, the types of players he noticed brought in. You're right, Burke was responsible for that trade. But you look at those players, it wasn't his fault that Clarkson got suspended and then he got injured and then Boland got injured and all that.
It was his fault that Clarkson's terrible this year.
Well, the
part of his
the
fault.
Roles that they've been put in have not been roles that they would play on a better team. Even the Devils, and you guys know I'm a big Devils fan, and Clarkson had that season when he was playing with better players, and he's not a 30-goal guy. I don't think we'll ever see him score 30 goals again. He's a guy that maybe gets 20 goals, but he's a guy that he's a third liner. He's a bottom six guy. And to me, this team has a very good top line and a bunch of players that really everyone seems to be pointing out and blaming. To me, Dave Boland, if he's healthy, I think he has a different role. The fact that Dave Boland is a key piece of two cups in Chicago, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden they're running him out of town in Toronto, it seems ridiculous. To me, it all starts with that group of defensemen, because we know the goaltending's pretty good.
I think the second line in Toronto doesn't get enough flack. That's one of my pet peeves. The Nazem Kadri, Joffrey Leupold, those guys, we know whether Kuhlman's playing there, they put somebody else on the wing. I don't think, and Kuhlman's a pending UFA too, we don't know where he's going to go. You know, there's
he wouldn't come back.
Talk that he might go to Pittsburgh.
He won't come
his
back,
friend Evgeny Malkin. We'll see that, you know, in time, we'll see where these guys go. But, like, Joffrey Leupold, Nazem Kadri, how many more guys in your top six are going to be good skaters with good skills that don't hit anyone? That, again, that silence speaks volumes. And then defensemen who can't defend. So Randy Carlyle, you know, as a coach, you're not going to be able to evade any kind of, you know, criticism. But I think the responsibility there is GM, former GM, and Brian Burke, players, and coaching staff. And Randy Carlyle's been there for a cup of coffee at the end of two seasons ago, 48 games last season, and one season here. This is his first full season, and it looks like he's on his way out. And I think he's going to be happy that he got out of Toronto now, because I don't think they're going on the way up in the next few years.
There really isn't a lot of positive energy around this team. You look at coaching, and sure, the coach has a responsibility to get his team out of an 8-game losing streak. But also, the way they played against the Winnipeg Jets deserved to win, absolutely. But the way this team has absolutely crumbled down the stretch here, the veterans on this team, and Phil Kessel at this point in his career is a veteran. He's not a guy that's been in the league for 1 or 2 years. Leupold is a guy that's been in the league for a lot of years. Phaneuf's been in the league for a lot of years. And there's only so many times you can say, oh, we're embarrassed, we're sorry about this. You got to step up and improve and get this team get back into the playoffs and winning playoff rounds.
This is the Leafs contracts, in my opinion. It's like when you're calling your friends and nobody's answering, and then you call the last guy you don't really want to go out with, but he'll go out with you, so you go out with him and have a beer. This is what happens with the
Leafs. Well, that wasn't me last night, because you guys went out and didn't call me.
Yeah, we didn't call you, so you weren't in that rotation. But the point is like, they didn't have anybody else to give their money to, and they were worried they were going to have nobody to give it to, so they gave it to Phaneuf and gave it to Kessel and some other guys and Clarkson, and now they're locked into these, hanging out with those guys, and they don't really like it that much. NHL news and notes after the break. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
7:30 on NHL Midweek. Richard Pollock filling in for Drew Mandel in the host chair. Also for the next three shows, actually, going to be filling in the host chair. Ezzie Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and Michael Remus.
Drew Mandel in the Deep South.
Fried chicken in it up.
Chicken and grits.
This segment's brought to you by Copy Stitch Embroidery and Design. The official sponsor of the IC game-winning goal and IC 50-50 contest has been serving Winnipeg and surrounding areas for over 15 years. No matter the size of the job, small or large, Copy Stitch Embroidery Design provides expert attention to customers' needs. Copy Stitch Embroidery Design, keeping you in stitches since 1996.
With this weather, are we going to switch to t-shirts, Dave, or are we going to keep the toques going? What are we doing here? Copy Stitch does a great job, by the way.
They do.
People love these toques.
Yeah, it's a good point.
People are always stopping me on the street. Do you have a toque? How can I win a toque?
We met a listener right before the show.
Yep. He wasn't wearing a toque.
That's true.
And we have to hook him up.
That's right.
Red Sultan?
Red Sultan.
NHL news and notes.
We start NHL news and notes.
By the way, that went a little long. Remus was supposed to cut that off.
That's like back. Are we going back to the future?
A DeLorean.
Is Marty McFly here? Chris Letang, guys, we actually saw Chris Letang. He was in town with the Penguins last week. He's coming back against Detroit tonight, and it's 2 months after his stroke. And Ray Shiro, you know, spoke a little bit today about how the fact that, you know, hockey didn't cause him to have the stroke, so that, you know, the doctors don't believe that playing hockey will, you know, hopefully not cause any kind of issues with that condition. Good to see him back, obviously.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's the first thing. I think we can all agree, David and Ezzie, and I can all agree that it's great to have him back. Let's talk about the effect he'll have on the roster, because the Pittsburgh Penguins came through town. You look at their defense, and they had trouble moving the puck. He's one of the best puck-moving defensemen in the National Hockey League. How big of an effect will he have on that team if he's playing at 100%?
I can't wait to find out, because I know that Pittsburgh's playing to Detroit tonight. I think it's in the second period now. And Chris Letang, I remember Dave and I were actually in Las Vegas. I remember when that news came out in early February. And it was really scary. And as you mentioned, it is a great story that he is back. But when you look at Chris Letang, I believe he's paired up with Rob Scuderi tonight on the third pairing.
Yes.
And they've had a lot of players in and out of that lineup. And as of late, they've had Brooks Orpik and Paul Martin together. But Chris Letang, you'd hope that he eventually gets back to being a top-pairing guy. But just the fact that Chris Letang is in that lineup, he has had problems, Richie, and he had problems last year in the playoffs. And in previous years, I remember against Philadelphia, he kind of wanders a little bit too much, and he likes to jump into the play, kind of like even P.K. Subban and Dustin Byfuglien.
Very similar.
But you look at his ability to just move the puck and be a reliable guy in the faceoff circle on the blue line. He's not obviously a center, but Chris Letang, you have to hope that he's able to. And he was healthy, but they were waiting for three weeks for obvious reasons to clear him. But just his ability and to put him out on the power play and the calming presence that he's going to add is really huge for their ability to go far this year. Pittsburgh Penguins are most likely going to line up against the Detroit Red Wings in the first round, and that's a preview of the series tonight. And you know, the Detroit Red Wings, they're starting to get healthier, and you need a guy like Chris Letang in the lineup, just like you're going to need Malkin, Marcel Gotch, all the other players that they have right now that are injured. So he has the ability to. I'm a little bit worried that in the middle of the season, right around Olympic time, he's going to be a little bit rusty, and I think we all expect him to be, but if he can get back into game shape, that's why I think they want him to get three games in here. He has the ability to play a key role in the playoffs.
And you look at their pairings, David, this is what I think they're going to go with, and as you mentioned it already, you know, Orpik Martin, that's one pairing. You know, we know that Dan Bylsma likes that pairing. You read the article going to the USA Hockey and going over to Sochi. You look at Letang and Scuderi, maybe they stick with that because Mata and Niskanen can play together.
Yep.
So it's certainly a formidable defense and far more dangerous than the defense we saw here last Thursday against the Jets.
Yeah, my biggest concern kind of going from what Ez was saying also is the fact that like he's not in game shape, and that's a problem. I mean, you don't want to be relying too much on Letang because, I mean, he's missed a significant chunk of change. Now, they haven't resolved the issue that he had, which was the hole in his heart, but they said that he's, you know, that didn't cause, like playing hockey wouldn't have caused the issue. But, like, I mean, it's just a scary prospect because, like I said, from a team morale point of view, it's great when you have a guy who's a well-liked guy in the locker room and who's seen as a leader on the ice. That's not a bad thing, getting that back in theory. But the problem is, will the reality kind of meet that? And will you be able to see Chris Letang play to his level that he could play at if he's still fighting kind of the mid-season, as Ez just alluded to, that mid-season rust?
And I think there's a good chance, Richie, that Dan Bylsma and Jacques Martin and Granato, I think there's a good chance that they keep him in that third, because if he gets three games in, that's not a lot here to all of a sudden elevate him to going into the playoffs and playing 25 minutes against the Red Wings. So I think there's a good chance that he stays as kind of like a third-pairing guy, and I think that actually wouldn't be a bad idea.
It's interesting. I think you guys are probably right about that. Quickly, before we go to break, Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province is going to join us after the break to talk about the firing of Mike Gillis and the prospective firing of John Tortorella. We'll hear more about that, and of course the hiring of Trevor Linden. Zach Rinaldo, guys, you know, guy you watch, he's an irritating player to watch, but seemed to be coming into his own playing with Couturier and Matt Reed. Even in the game, he gets suspended, and he had a hit to the head that resulted in a four-game suspension. What did you guys think of that Zach Rinaldo hit, and did you think the suspension was too much or too little, Ezzy?
Well, I actually, you remember this, Richie, when we were watching the Jets game on Monday night against the Minnesota Wild, I was watching it again, and I actually saw it that hit live, and that hit was on Chad Ruedel, who's actually a rookie on the Buffalo Sabres. That hit was extremely dirty, and I was telling you, I mean, I don't think they can play this guy. I don't know if Craig Berube can play Zach Rinaldo and put him out there in a situation where he's going to do something stupid like that in the playoffs. And you're right, Zach Rinaldo has found a home on the Philadelphia Flyers, but this isn't his first time that he's been disciplined. And this hit, I think you could have given him more. This is extremely dangerous. It's textbook sticking your elbow out and making a blow to the head. And I think Shanny could have given him one or two more games easily, maybe even 10, considering he's got a history. But you have to think that Craig Berube is probably not going to play him much. He's not a guy that's going to play on the power play or special teams or anything like that very much anyways. But the fact that you just can't trust him in these situations, and it's almost like a Matt Cook situation, even though Matt Cook brings a little bit more offense. Zach Rinaldo's not a guy that scores many goals. His expertise is hitting and fighting and all that. So I was really disappointed in him because he's a guy we've seen come into Winnipeg and he's fought. And so to me, that was a really scary hit.
Yeah, you know, he's a rat to watch. And you see plays like that. You see, you know, he scored a nice goal before that, and you think, okay, maybe he's turning his game around, turning into a player, and then he makes a dirty hit like that, and you think, why do we need that in the game? Quickly, guys, before we go to break, just a reminder, Blake Wheeler is going to be signing autographs from 4 to 5 this Sunday, April 13th, at Gino's newest show home on 24 Waterstone Drive in the South Point development. Bring your kids down, go down, get an autograph, get to meet, I think, the best forward on the Winnipeg Jets. He's really carved out a nice spot for himself on the top line.
What about Thorpes?
I love Thorpes. But, you know, I think your boy Thorpes isn't exactly in Wheeler's class offensively, personality-wise.
That's right.
Number one. When we come back, Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on this Wednesday, April 9th, 2014.
A little STP.
That's a little STP here. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com are off. And producer Michael Remus has been doing a terrific job today with the audio on and off the air. Can't beat that. Right before we get to Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province, this segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For over 25 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tomorrow night's Derek Edwards, he's sold out. Rob Pugh and Sean Lacomber are going to be on Friday, and Graham Clark and Ron Sparks are available on Saturday. Nigel Lawrence next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. No Friday show because it's Good Friday, and if you go to the Rumors website, you'll see a funny little, you know, of course, if it's a Rumors website, a comedy club, it has to be funny. So there's a little joke there about the Good Friday, and then Saturday, Nigel Lawrence will be there as well. So that's the Rumors schedule for this week. We've heard a lot of rumors about the Vancouver Canucks, and some of those rumors actually came true this week.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Former Winnipeg Sun writer and now Vancouver Province writer Ed Willis joins us to talk about the Canucks. Ed, how are you tonight?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing pretty well, Ed, and you know, we spent basically the first hour of the show talking about the Canucks, so we can't imagine what the radio is like in Vancouver. What was your initial reaction to the Mike Gillis firing?
A little surprised it came at this point. I thought there might be, you know, like a bit of a cooling off period after the season. Not surprised he was fired, simply because those are two pretty big contracts tied up in the GM and the coach's position. But you know, clearly there was a plan in place. They wanted to bring the franchise icon back, and you know, it's a popular move now. Now we have to see if he can deliver the goods.
And how much of this had to do with the season ticket renewals being today?
Oh, it's sort of a bigger picture than that. It's to do with, I mean, that's got something to do with it, but it's to do with the brand and the damage done to it. And it's fans are just so turned off by this organization right now. And, you know, this was, you know, I said Trevor's a good man, but he's been given the keys to the operation, and he's been away from the game for 6 years. And that's a very, very big consideration. And you consider the work that's in front of him, got to hire a GM, have to make a decision on the coach. Draft is coming up. Free agency is coming up. Probably wants to restructure the hockey department a bit. You know, that's a lot of work and to do in about a two-month period here.
It really is. Did you look at Mike Gillis' interview last week on the Team 1040 any differently now that he was fired than you did before?
I think a couple of things. What's become apparent now is he was kind of cut out of the loop of ownership for about the last 3 weeks, month of the season, and I think that was him just saying, look, you know, go ahead and fire me if you want, but this is what you can expect if you bring me back. You know, it was a kind of him drawing his line in the sand, and I think at that stage his fate may have been decided already, but you know, he was going to kind of go down swinging, I guess is the best analogy.
Ed, I know you tweeted about this. A name, there's a lot of names flying out there right now. We talked about Lawrence Gilman, he's sticking around. But a lot of names for the next potential general manager. I guess it's a two-part question. Who do you think is at the top of that list? Because I know you tweeted you think that Bob Nicholson isn't the front runner that everybody thinks he is. But who do you think's on that short list? And Trevor Linden mentioned he wants to have that GM in place early June, mid-June. Do you think he's possibly going to name that general manager before that?
I wouldn't be surprised, because the guy who's kind of emerging as the favorite is Jim Benning, the assistant general manager in Boston. Winning pedigree, some familiarity with Trevor. They played a bit in Vancouver. They're both Western guys. They're both Western leaguers. He ticks a lot of boxes. Wouldn't be overly expensive. A guy who Trevor can work with. If it's internal, it'll be Lawrence Gilman, Winnipegger, and he's kind of the resident capologist. And he really has done good work managing the Canucks salary cap. So it kind of looks like Benning right now. We'll see how that plays out in the next little while.
How much of a role, we're joined by Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province. Ed, how much of a role do you think Linden will have in hockey operations decisions?
Well, it's really interesting to me on, a number of different levels, and not the least of which is this is kind of one of the new models to have that kind of president overlord, and he's kind of the general manager, except he's the general manager 2.0. And then he has the guy underneath him and then the hockey department. And, Trevor talked about, it kind of increases the IQ of the hockey department and, get a little, broader base, when the big decisions are made. But it is still kind of new to hockey, and it's certainly new to this franchise. So, it'll be really interesting to see, what's structured, who gets what job, how many people are in play, and everything like that.
Ed, how do you, where do you think Mike Gillis ends up after all this?
Oh, geez, I'm not sure. I mean, he was such a polarizing figure here by the end. His strengths, in my opinion, were, the strengths he brought from his background as an agent. Mm-hmm. That was as a negotiator, as a payroll manager. He didn't present well. He's a bit of a cold fish, and he never really did get the media PR part of the job. He was an out-of-the-box hiring in the first place by ownership. I'm just not sure where he fits in. He was always an outsider, and that was actually one of his selling points when he was interviewed and hired by the Canucks 6 years ago. But as it evolved, it was pretty clear that a lot of his colleagues at the general manager's level didn't like working with him. I think that might have had something to do with his difficulty in making trades.
Ed, now that the Gillis situation has been resolved, what would you say is the fate of John Tortorella?
I think he's gone at the end of the season. I really have a hard time. I don't know how you bring in a new president, then bring in a general manager and foist the coach on them, especially after the season the Canucks have had. And if you believe all this is about rebuilding the brand, I'm not sure how you can bring back the guy who's, overseen this season, where not only did they fail to make the playoffs, but they just played a really boring style. And, mm-hmm. He's got two Art Ross trophy winners in the lineup who aren't going to hit 50 points this season. And that kind of says it all.
Ed, we obviously know that Trevor Linden's going to have to bring in a general manager or hire internally, and as you mentioned, he might also, the general manager might possibly have to hire a new head coach. But looking at the personnel of this team, we know that Ryan Kessler allegedly asked for a trade out of town. When you look at this Vancouver Canucks team, you touched on it a little bit there, but when you look at this team, to you, what has to be addressed in the offseason as far as player personnel goes?
Well, let me say this. I think the most intriguing name out there is people who are going to be awfully interested in Winnipeg is Evander Kane, who's a Vancouver guy who, mm-hmm. by all accounts, would love to play in Vancouver. I understand he's got more luggage than Imelda Marcos, but for whatever else he is, he's a 24-year-old power forward, and if he gets his head right, he's a game changer. That's a real interesting one for me. Beyond that, they've got about 3, 4, 5 kids. They've got one real blue chip prospect in Bo Horvat, and a couple of guys who are fairly highly rated. So I think they've got to go about getting 2-3 new faces in the organization, and I think they have to elevate the role of Zach Cassian, who he and Eddie Lack have really been the only two positive stories from a personnel point of view to emerge from the Canucks this season. And Cassian's been doing it while playing 13 minutes a game on the third line, and he's been their best forward for the last month. They've got to see if he really is a frontline player, you know, a guy who can score 25 goals and 60 points and play that power forward role, because that's a hell of a player in the NHL.
And we're joined by Ed Willis, the Vancouver Province, covered the Jets for many years here in Winnipeg, always does a great job. Ed, we talk about personnel, you talked about, you know, maybe Evander Kane, somebody they're interested in. What about the defense? You know, there are some rumblings already that Kevin Bieksa may be a guy that's on his way out. Are you going to see the change throughout the roster, you think?
First of all those guys have no trade clauses, so moving them is going to be very difficult. That's maybe the most shocking thing that's happened. Well, God, I can't really. There's been a number of things, but just the way that, you know, that defense, like, looked pretty good. You know, you had Dan Hamm, named to the Olympic team in December. He's fallen off the map in the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. You know, Kevin is, he's a little spotty, but when he's on his game, he is a terrific two-way defenseman. Alex Edler looked like he was going to be an all-star. You know, they went out and paid pretty big money for Jason Garrison, and really the only defenseman who had a plus season was Chris Tanev, who was a college free agent a couple of years ago. He's been out of the lineup for about the last, 6 weeks, maybe even 2 months, and that's been a big hole. But that's one thing they have to, stay together in defense, and they've got to keep Frank Corrado, who they like. I see him being in the mix next season. But that's one thing they've got to do is identify a style of play that suits that defense.
We'll let you go on this last question, Ed. You wrote about it in the Vancouver Province. I think it'll be out tomorrow morning. The possibility of Trevor Linden working with Mike Gillis, well, it wasn't a possibility because of their history and the negotiations of the union and the NHL. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. The Reader's Digest version is this. Gillis was a Bob Goodenow guy, and Trevor was the leader of the PA in the lockout, and, you know, they were kind of following Goodenow's stance was he just would not allow any linkage between salary and revenue. It was always going to be an open market, and, you know, he burnt one season, and it looked like he was, you know, gonna burn at least part of another one. And depending on who you talk to, Trevor either took it upon himself, or was acting on the wishes of the rank and file, and he basically went against Goodenow. Goodenow was released. Ted Saskin came in, and, you know, they cut the deal that ended that lockout in 2004-05, and pretty good deal. It was 56%, I believe, was the percentage of revenues, and it was such a bad deal for the players. The owners had to reopen it almost killed another season 6 years later. So that's the genesis of that. And I can tell you, like, when Gillis took over, it was pretty clear to Trevor that there wasn't a place for him in this organization.
It's an incredible story. That's one incredible storyline in a season of incredible storylines. Oh. Ed, thanks very much for joining us tonight on NHL Midweek.
Okay, all the best, and hi to everybody in Winnipeg.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to have Ed Willis cover the team for many years for the Winnipeg Sun, the Winnipeg Jets, of course.
And big thanks to Ed, who obviously a big day for him today, and it has been for the last few weeks.
Absolutely.
You know, Vancouver Province does a great job covering the Canucks. We've had Jim Jamieson, Ben Kuzma on Saturday. Just a crazy year, because, let's be honest, guys, at least for me personally, I had the Canucks making the playoffs. They've been the class with a few other teams, but in the Western Conference, they've been a staple in the playoffs, and this year they got some important decisions to make. Trevor Linden's got to decide if Torts is sticking around and who the next GM's going
to
be.
You have to wonder, and we didn't ask yet because we're up against it here, but if, you know, that the relationships that between Gillis and Linden, maybe there's some fractured relationships between other players, because, you know, I saw Chris Chelios at his Hall of Fame induction kind of talk about, you know, he was a little more of a hardline guy as opposed to Linden, who moved over, was a little bit more conciliatory. So maybe there's some negotiation issues. These dynamics are interesting. You know, Ed talks about GMs dealing with Mike Gillis. Mike Gillis didn't do himself a lot of favors, and that doesn't hurt you when you're GM of the team. It hurts you when you're looking for a job, though.
Yeah, it's a regime change. Trevor Linden is kind of, he even admitted this, he's kind of stood back from the Vancouver Canucks. He's had his own business interest, and now Trevor Linden's coming in, and, you know, he's been put in charge by the Aquilini family to right the ship and get the guys that he wants in there.
It's been a fun 2 hours. Didn't that fly by?
Yep.
I had a great time.
Well, whenever Dave Manuk is here, it's a good time.
Remus on his game, Dave's on his game, Ezzy's on his game. Thank our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, CompuStitch Embroidery and Design, and Bernstein's Deli. I'd like to thank our guests, Jack Edwards of Nesson, one of our favorites to watch on, you know, if you're watching NHL Center Ice, and then one of our favorite writers, Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province, giving his time to talk about the disaster that's become the Vancouver Canucks. Tomorrow night, you can listen to the Jets' last home game of the year against the Boston Bruins, and then the season ends on Friday against the Calgary Flames. Next Wednesday, last NHL midweek of the season at Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Come down and say hello. And then this Saturday, the Illegal Curve playoff preview show begins at 9 a.m. sharp. Have a good night, and we'll see you on Saturday.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.